All right. I think maybe we're going. Are we on live? Can you hear us?
I'm looking to see if we're on live. And, well, I heard that. And we're live, so I'd hit it.
All right.
Welcome to B&B Network's Your News Tonight from our New York studios. I'm your host, Bob Chetley. With us is Chet Bobley and our features editor, Rona McLittlemore. On tonight's episode, we'll discuss the 60s, because that's where we are right now, living in the heart of 1965. We'll talk through the Civil Rights Act, the Great Society, the Immigration Act of 1964, the space program, and on the lighter side, we'll talk a little bit about removing silver from money. All right, all that's with us tonight. Okay. Let's start with Chet's report on the Civil Rights Act. From what I'm seeing, this pretty much guarantees that we'll be living in a prosperous world side by side with no animosity. Do you think, Chet, that that will take as long as 1980 to achieve?
Oh, no, it surely won't. The Civil Rights Act that was passed last year in 1964 will, I think, usher in a great period of equity, will reduce poverty and actually enrich the country economically as we get more people into better jobs and jobs that are more appropriate for them.
Well, certainly it'll drop the tension that was raised in our country. And I can see racial tension dropping to practically zero, can't you?
Well, yes. The young Ted Kennedy, senator from Massachusetts, in fact, made a very specific point about, you know, that Massachusetts had found itself in a similar situation with minority groups. And he'd said, in fact, on the floor of the Senate, in Massachusetts, we found that job opportunity is the key to assimilation of any minority group. And he was able, he talked about that once these minorities there found a wider range of jobs, they were able to cast off their poverty, break out of their slums, and most importantly, measure up to the standards of social behavior set by the community. Crime and illegitimacy declined as men found something to live for, and this can happen again. And I believe that's true. I see nothing but upsides for both the Negro community and for the United States as a whole.
That's amazing, Chet. It sounds like Massachusetts is just a template for all of us. What do you think, Rona?
Well, you know, it doesn't seem to me like it's been a very popular piece of legislation. You know, after that big march that happened in Washington, that new polling organization, Gallup, did some polling about that and asked people what they thought, and they found that 60% of people they surveyed had an unfavorable view of that march and said that they felt it would cause violence and would not accomplish much of anything. Now, since we've gone a little further and we've gotten, you know, it's kind of in hindsight, it's all done. There's more support building for it about a month after they passed it. Support was about 50-50. So, you know, it's getting better. It's getting more popular, as I think, as people get more used to it. But a lot of people still are kind of suspicious of the whole civil rights movement. In fact, a lot of people think that there are actually communists involved in civil rights organizations. Again, this is Gallup again. Yeah, Gallup again says about a fifth of the country thinks that that's the case, that there are communists involved in that. So, I mean, you know, time's going to tell we'll see how well this works out, but there is some skepticism from the American public right now, though it is getting a little more support.
Well, that's certainly unfounded. I mean, you look at Massachusetts and what a dream it's been.
Yeah, certainly there have been naysayers on it. One of the strongest in Congress was Senator Thurmond. Had very strong words about how this was going to undermine the Constitution, was going to require people to serve and others that they didn't want to force them to, and basically create a new type of slavery, if you can believe that, you know. And he even said that it might lead to having to require schools to have mandated amounts of students of each color. And of course, you know, that's completely incorrect. You know, Senator Humphreys, who, as you know, is one of the supporters of the bill in the legislature, was very clear in that regard. You know, as to for instance, you know, one of the examples given by Thurmond was of a woman of one race would be required to give a massage to a woman of another race if she didn't want, even if she didn't want to do it. And Senator Humphrey says this is not, that wasn't provided in the bill. And he pointed out that all it says is that we will not deny a person access to a public place because like a hotel or restaurants and so forth, because of race. It doesn't force anybody to do anything. It doesn't prevent.
It certainly sounds like those fears are unfounded then.
I think they are. Senator Humphrey noted that, you know, it isn't going to interfere with seniority and rights of an employer to employ anyone. There's no call for racial balance in the schools. In fact, as Humphrey stated, if the bill were to compel it, it would be a violation of the Constitution because it would be handling the matter on the basis of race and would be transporting students because of race. So these people that think that there's going to be like forced busing and people are going to be forced to do things that they don't like under the bill, you know, they're crazy.
Well, let's move along to another one of the big successes so far of the Lyndon Johnson administration, the Great Society. You know, we talked about, started this with my question on, do you think it'll take as long as 1980 to achieve perfect racial harmony? Certainly no, and I don't think it'll take longer than 1980 to achieve economic security for everyone in the country, because it's not undeniable not everyone's rich. Lyndon Johnson, though, wants to eliminate poverty. He's put through things like the food stamp program, the community action agencies, Head Start, and increased Social Security payments for everyone. Johnson's also spent billions of dollars to schools. Perhaps the biggest change is the large federal welfare program, which includes Medicare and Medicaid. It's nearly certain that these programs will make health care cheaper and more affordable for all. And don't forget public broadcasting, a government-run and funded radio and television network. I'm sure that CBS, NBC, and ABC will soon be losing lots of viewers to that. Let's not forget the agencies and mandates that are created in commerce. Transportation. Well, I'm sure it'll cost a lot of money. Some negative politicians say that in only 50 years, just Medicare and Medicaid alone, if their projections are right, will cost 25% of every federal dollar spent. That seems crazy to me. Chet, what do you think?
Oh, I, you know, my opinions on this is, you know, we've seen now over two decades of constant growth in the economy. There's no sign that's going to slow down or reverse. And it's through that economic expansion and the jobs that are going to be filled by better people due to the Civil Rights Act, that's going to help expand this economy. And it'll, you know, it'll expand into the indefinite future as far as I can see.
What do you think, Rona?
Well, you know, you mentioned Medicare, and I think that is really on the minds of a lot of people. I mean, again, this great new this new polling organization polled people to see what they were worried about, really kind of what's on the collective minds of Americans. And really, when it comes to issues that they were concerned about, Medicare really way up there. I think it was maybe 29-30% listed that as their top concern for the next few coming years. So I think that's a big thing, and people are thinking about that now. I don't know if it's going to be as big of an issue as people say. I mean, it's not supposed to be a huge part of our budget, but you know, who can say?
So you're saying that people are concerned that Medicare is going to be too expensive?
That's kind of the feeling I'm getting from this polling, yeah.
Wow. It'll only cost pennies.
Well, and that was supposed to be the case, right? And it was supposed to be a good retirement plan, and for quite a while it was. But I think people are getting worried. I mean, our population is really kind of starting to take off now, and I mean, you hear people talking now about the big population bomb and that we need to be concerned about being able to feed our entire population. I think those things are kind of weighing heavily on people's minds now.
Well, I've heard that, you know, at some point we'll have as many as 200 million people in this country. That's crazy.
I know. It kind of boggles the mind to think about that, doesn't it?
All right. Well, moving along to the next topic, the impact of the Immigration Act of 1964. Ted Kennedy, that firebrand from Massachusetts that you brought up, Chet, has promised it won't change the demographic makeup of the United States. Just make immigration more fair. What do you think, Chet?
I think it's very correct. I'll just for a couple things. I mean, so Attorney General Nicholas Katzenbach, you know, he's told us this bill is not designed to increase or accelerate the number of newcomers permitted to come to America. Indeed, he said, this measure provides for an increase in only a small fraction of permissible immigration. What it does is all it does is switch the way people are allowed from where people are allowed to come in. Right now, under this new bill, it's going to expand the number of countries that can send immigrants to the U.S. instead of it all being concentrated on Europe. This not only gives us a better opportunity to get people of good character and high skills from all over the world, it helps us in the international realm as well, because there's been a lot of complaints that the United States is a little racist in the way that it conducts its immigration. Based on that,
Chet, how would the demographics not change?
Well, you know, for one thing, people over-exaggerate how much immigration there's going to be from certain areas. For instance, you know, one of the complaints is, you know, people look at India and are concerned that we may be overwhelmed from that. But as Secretary of State Dean Rusk noted, you know, the estimates, best information they have, the estimates, they're looking at about 8,000 immigrants from India in the next 5 years.
And oh, 2,000 a year, that's not a problem.
Well, yeah, and that's, he, you know, it's, and he doesn't see any reason that it's going to, you know, he says there's not a general move towards people trying to immigrate to the United States, so we shouldn't expect to see it. Same thing with people look at Japan or China and are concerned about immigration there. Former Attorney General Robert Kennedy had noted that immigration from what he called the Asia Pacific Triangle, basically those same countries, would be about 5,000 immigrants. They expect that would come in the first year, but there isn't going to be any great influx after that. Senator Hiram Fong from Hawaii basically said the same thing. They estimate a total for the first 5 years of 5,391 people from Japan. That And he says our cultural pattern never be changed in America's concern. And his reasoning is that, you know, Asians only represent 0.6% of the population of the United States. This is not going to upset that balance.
Well, that's completely understandable when you put it that way. Rona, you've been going off to the folks at Gallup. Did they talk about this?
Well, yes, they have. And I'm sorry, what was your first name again?
I am Bob Shelby.
Okay, sorry, Bob. I'm brand new here. I haven't been here long, so please excuse me. Yeah, you know, Gallup has polled people about that. And, you know, my suspicion is this, is that the Johnson administration has kind of drummed this up to take away from some of the civil unrest we've been seeing lately on the streets of America, because really, nobody really cares about immigration. Gallup tells us that here in this year, 1965, only about 1% of people really think immigration is an important issue. And, you know, a lot of them think that they don't really care one way or another on this bill. They think it's probably going to be okay, because one of the changes is that they're going to base these on people coming in with occupational skills, or those who already have family members living here, or those who are political refugees. And I think for most of us on paper, that looks and sounds pretty good. And that those people who are coming in anyway probably will be ones who want to assimilate very easily and work on acquiring U.S. citizenships and really, you know, become an American citizen when they get here.
So the nightmare that the people who are, you know, saying horrible things about this bill, it sounds like it's not true. They're talking about huge throngs of people, dozens of languages being spoken across school districts. We're talking about, you know, places where natural-born Americans become, well, an absolute minority in some school district. So
right, and I don't see that happening, you know, because most Americans really, even at this point, 39% of people surveyed want to see immigration stay at the present level. And, you know, even almost that many, 33% say they want to see it decreased. And there are only just a very small few, a minority of folks who think that we should increase immigration. So, you know, I think there's good reason that this really isn't at the top of most people's minds right now.
So it would be really politically extraordinarily unpopular for people to try and bring over tens of hundreds of thousands of people to upset the balance of America.
I would say that's safe. That was a fair assessment.
You know, I hate to make an immigration joke because it always seems like I might be crossing the line. But it does sound like those people certainly, it sounds like Ted Kennedy's telling the absolute truth, that this will not upset the balance of the United States at all.
Well, you know, I think we all want good things for our country and to go forward in the future and to have bring good positive people into the country who are really going to help out and assist and be good citizens. And I think that's what we're all looking for. And, you know, like I said, on paper, this looks like what this bill is aimed at, too.
Well, if I can add. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to add. I mean, you know, there's several aspects of this bill that are not really appreciated. You know, as I noted, the most populous regions of the planet are only going to be sending in, you know, 5,000 from the Asian area. Another 5,000 from India or so, 8,000. You know, those aren't very big numbers, but we also have to look at the fact that not only does this bill reallocate away from favoring immigration from Europe, it also, and this is the first time that the United States has ever done this, it also limits immigration from other places in the Western Hemisphere. So, people from Central and South America are not going to have the freedom to immigrate into the United States as they have had up to this time. And so in reality, this is going to cut immigration from the poorer American countries. And in reality, you know, based on these figures, very well could lead to declining immigration.
Wow. That's just some amazing data. Well, we have been talking about immigrants, and we've been talking about Martin Luther King. So let's go from Martin Luther King to Martian Luther King. Runa, what can you tell us about NASA? How soon will we be on Mars? And how is that great American scientist, Wernher von Braun, doing?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should mention Mars. Actually, you know, there are a lot of people who are really looking forward to that, for NASA doing that. And I think that that's probably off down the road a ways. I mean, we've just barely gotten into space, right? We just recently, excuse me again. We just recently launched a Gemini, if I recall that correctly. Yes, here it was, Gemini 3, that just lifted off in March of this year. And, you know, that program seems to be going pretty well. I mean, I know that our goal here, as President Kennedy laid it out in 1961, was that we want to be on the moon by the end of the decade. And, you know, I'm kind of worried that maybe at this point that's kind of a pie in the sky sort of goal. And
it seems very difficult to go from sending two men up into orbit to being on the moon. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, you know, and the Soviets, it just seems, have been kind of a step ahead of us every time. I mean, Sputnik, they were there first. They just recently completed the very first spacewalk, you know, and beat us to that as well. I think we can beat the Soviets in the long run, but I think we're going to have to invest a lot of money to do it. And I'm not sure that Americans are going to be fully behind that. I mean, let's look at the numbers, shall we? In 1963, the total federal budget, $93 billion. That's billion dollars is our budget. Lots and lots of money we're talking about. Of that, NASA got $5.7 billion. And of that amount of money we sent to NASA, for all of NASA, the Apollo program, which is the one that hasn't really even started yet, we haven't launched any Apollo missions yet, that gobbled up about two-thirds of that number. That is more money. That is more money that we spend on NASA than we spend on our war veterans from World War One, Two, and the Korean conflict.
And don't forget the Spanish American War veterans. So
right.
Some of them are turning 90 this year.
Right. You know, I think a lot of people are just going to look at that number. I mean, because that's just a huge amount of money. And then all the civil unrest that we've had that's been going on across the country, and just wonder if it's worth it to spend that much money on space exploration, right? I know it was President Kennedy's plan, but you know, he's no longer president, and even though most presidents will get a second term, I'm not sure Johnson's going to be able to do that. I think he's got an uphill battle coming in 68. He might not win that election. Depends on who the Republicans put up against him.
I'm sure he'll be a shoo-in. Look at how he did against Goldwater. Chet, what do you think?
Well, it's, you know, I would love to see us be able to make it to the moon by the end of the decade. But, you know, I've been talking to some scientist friends I have at Stanford University, and one of them pointed out quite interestingly is that, you know, we sort of look at it as being sort of like an airplane ride or something. But he says, no, it's much more complex. They need tons of computing power, you know, computers to do things. And you know, right now it doesn't look like we could ever have enough computing power, especially on board the ship itself that needs to be there. Because as it gets further from the Earth, there'll be delays, potentially signals getting lost, and so forth. And you know, that computers take up a lot of space, as you know.
I don't trust them, and from engineering friends I've talked to, they said, give me a good slide rule any day, they'll take on any computer.
Yeah, but just, you know, like when we talk about technological developments, though, I think the computer is one thing that might actually be taking away from the space program. I think we've gotten a little maybe over-involved in that from a technology point of view, and I think it's kind of taken away some of the luster of the Apollo program and the moon landing.
And what are they good for? Really, banking, perhaps? I don't know.
That would be my guess, but
I don't see a lot of big uses for
again a good adding machine.
Well, in the space program, it works because you have to have, you know, you're doing lots and lots of calculations very rapidly, and it makes sense in there. But you're right. I mean, you know, there are some obvious, there's obvious applications within business and industry, but outside of that, you know,
we might need three or four in the entire world. That's about I can't see many more than that. So
these kids like the newfangled stuff.
So what are your thoughts on any more thoughts on that, Rona?
You know, again, I kind of question the public's excitement about NASA and about the space race, I guess you could call it, because we're really battling it out with the Russians at this point. But I don't know that people are really that in awe of the space program. Again, going back to Gallup, what can't those guys do, right? They asked people about this statement, that the human race accomplished its single greatest technological achievement of all time by landing a man on the moon, if that would be the case. And only about 39% of people agree with that statement. 59% of people said, nah, pff, bah, who cares?
Well, you know, I'd have to go with canned beer.
Right? It's the best thing since sliced bread. Wait a minute. They're both made from yeast. Think we're onto something there.
Well, before I bring everything home with a discussion on my lighter note topic, anyone else have any thoughts about the year 1965?
Well, I don't, you know, I was talking to my, as I said, some people I knew that were scientists with Stanford University, and you know, I may be, hopefully I'm not revealing something I shouldn't, but one of the gentlemen I talked to is this researcher named Paul Ehrlich, and he's really getting into studying population and so forth. And as you know, populations are exploding and all over the world, just growing tremendously. And just one scary thing he told me is that by the middle or end of the 1970s, we are going to be seeing hundreds of millions of people starve to death, no matter what we try to do at this point. And so it should be interesting. He's working on a book that he's hoping to have published in a few years on that, but that's a scary thought that we could, you know, widespread. He believes that we'd even see widespread starvation here in the United States. So I guess I'll turn it over.
Certainly not in the United States.
No, it's, you know, we're just, his thing is, his way he sees it, we're just, the world population is outstripping the capacity to grow food. And with the rates populations are growing, you know, yes, even in the United States, we could see hunger and deaths due to that. Now, you know, and of course, you know, yeah, it doesn't look like that now, but when you extrapolate how fast populations are growing, you know, yeah, I could see that happening by the late 70s, maybe even, you know, early 80s at the latest.
Well, you know, but I don't think you can leave out the ingenuity of Americans. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm old enough that I do remember, I was a kid, the Great Depression, and you know, we didn't have any money. We were poor dirt farmers from the Midwest. You couldn't grow anything. The Dust Bowl was an issue. But fortunately, my father was just a dead-eye shot with a rifle, and he would hunt squirrels, and that kept meat on our table and, you know, kept food in our bellies. So you never count Americans out.
No, and we certainly can't. And speaking of counting, that brings us to my amusing lighter note for the day, pocket change. Seems like it's costing the U.S. government too much money to print up silver coinage, so they've decided to remove the silver entirely. That's the first time since the country has been a nation that we won't have any precious metals in our coins. Seems like a prudent money-saving idea to me. After all, there aren't any gold coins anymore, so how could it hurt to get rid of silver and take it out of our money?
Well, you know, part of the problem behind this is that, I don't know if you remember last year during Christmas shopping season, but it was last year and the year before that shopkeepers around the country had a hard time finding coinage to make change for people when they bought stuff. And, you know, nobody's really sure what the problem is. I've heard some rumors that maybe people are hoarding silver coins and so they aren't staying in circulation. But
a quarter is worth a quarter. It'll always be worth a quarter, won't it?
Well, nobody really knows why they're doing this. You know, why would you collect a coin, especially, you know, one that would be in circulation? That's just silly. But, you know, there are about 50 billion coins in circulation, and you'd think that would be enough. But, again, it doesn't seem to be. Merchants run short. They go to banks to ask for more. The banks go to the Fed. The Fed goes to the Mint in Philadelphia and Denver. And, you know, it's just a big mess. And they don't have enough silver to print more coins. So, you know, I think having more coins in circulation will be a good thing. I don't want to go to the store and not be able to get change. You know, I want my money back when it's owed to me. And I don't want the reason that they just don't have coins to be the reason for that.
Oh. Crazy. Chet, what do you think?
Oh, that is a crazy situation. It's probably a good idea to take the silver. I mean, silver prices have crept up, but, you know, I doubt it'll get any worse than that. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous that they, you know, for instance, would do that with other coins. I mean, a penny's always going to be made out of copper.
Well, sure. Well, on that note.
Well, I don't know. You know, I had one more thing that I kind of wanted to discuss. I mean, it's kind of more of a cultural thing than we've been talking about. Well, you know, I was just wondering if, I'm sure that you're all both viewers of Ed Sullivan, as am I. And I was just wondering if you saw those English boys. They were on about a year ago. What?
The Ruddles?
It's like a bug. Beatles, that's it. Beatles, that's the name. The kids seem so into them. And I don't know, you know, it just sounds like so much screeching to me. Well,
and they spelled the name wrong. It's the Beatle is a B-E-E-T.
I know. I'm troubled. Okay. They're English, you know. You know.
Maybe that's how they spell it.
But I was just wondering what you thought about that and, you know, this whole rock music thing that's been... What are we now?
Well, I was
6-7 years since Elvis. I don't... You know. That boy shaking his loins on TV like that. Can you believe that?
I have been just a little bit playing possum on this particular one because I have heard of this new group out of England called the Rolling Stones, and I think their music is quite suggestive. The title of one of their songs is "I Can't Get No Satisfaction."
Mm. You know, give me Dino and Sinatra. And those Rat Pack boys any day. This music will never last. People will come to their senses.
I agree. It's a fad. It'll pass.
Like the computer.
All right. Well, any other bits on looking back on 1965?
I think we've covered it.
Well, on that note, I would like to introduce our cast tonight. This has been B&B Network, as presented by the Bombs and Bands Players. As always, I am your dedicated and humble host, John Wilder. With me, as always, has been Mark.
Howdy. Goodbye, I guess.
And the missus.
Y'all come back now, are you here?